Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mike, let's go. Lawrence Holmes here with you tonight. I'm excited because this is one of those guests where I've always wanted to interview, and now I've got the opportunity to interview Frank Mir, and that's because Bellator 198 is coming to Chicago. They're going to be at the Allstate Arena April 28th. It's the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix, and this is a fight that a lot of people are excited about. Frank Mir versus Fedor. Frank, thank you so much for jumping in and being here in studio. I've been a fan of your work for a long time, so I'm glad that we get the opportunity to sit down and chat.
No, it's awesome, man. I appreciate it. Really enjoying the city.
What made you want to take this fight?
Well, I wanted to get back into MMA after the layoff, and Bellator had the opportunity to go for the heavyweight title that they had vacated, and they made it a tournament, so it was very enticing, and I think tournaments captivate people's attention and imagination very quickly. And knowing that the opening round I'd be opening up against Fedor really was extremely motivating. You know, not that, you know, you're not motivated to fight every time, but you know, let's face it. If I was facing some young guy that, you know, no one had heard of, might not have been easy to get out of bed. You know, I mean, not that I don't go to the gym and train, but knowing that you're facing another legend, that this is going to be something that people are going to remember for the rest of your career and even after you're long gone, it gives that a little bit extra.
When you were laid out, and when you were not fighting, what were you thinking? Were you always thinking, I'm going to get back into the octagon? Or were you thinking, maybe it's time that I let it go and I go do the next thing in my life?
Mixed bag, back and forth. I think there's some mornings I got up and be like, you know what? I think it's time just to move on completely. And then getting into commentary, doing the commentary for the ACB, being around it all the time, something I enjoyed. And then, you know, getting back in the gym, moving around and just going and working out with my daughter, who's very much into wanting to do MMA now, and wrestling, doing jiu-jitsu and boxing, and seeing that, I still like it, I still enjoy it, made me realize, well, you know, I can still commentate. I'm going to do that, you know, and I've been doing it even through the training camp. I got my podcast, I do Phone Booth Fighting. I'm opening up a gym, so I can still have these different ventures, but those things will always be there. They're things I can do when I'm 50, 60 years old. Obviously, fighting at a high level not going to be as easy to attain. So, retirement's the rest of my life, so I was like, well, I still have it now. I still want to fight. I still enjoy it, and I'm going to go ahead and push, you know, and go out there and compete while it's still available to me to do so.
Do you remember when you made the decision that you wanted to be a fighter professionally?
It's kind of one of those things that I think that because, you know, I kept a full-time job up until 2008. And so,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't pay what it paid now, you know? And so, I don't know if I've ever considered myself a professional fighter in that sense. Does that make, you know, it wasn't until after the first Brock fight where I actually could sit back and go, wow, I can actually just make a living off of just fighting and support a family. Until then, I still had to work a 9-to-5, you know, so to speak, type of job. And so as far as like, I was always a martial artist and always a fighter. I always felt that way because I grew up in it. My dad owned gyms. But as far as it was kind of those things like, hey, I love to do martial arts and someone's going to pay me for it. Probably not on the same thought process as, I never thought of myself like a football player or a basketball player. Like, oh, those guys are paid athletes with contracts. I always thought of myself as like, oh, this is something I love to do and it's my passion. And I'm lucky, almost more like an artist. It's like, well, you know, you're not a professional artist. You're somebody that happens to paint. And if you're good enough, someone will pay a lot of money for one of your drawings. And that's in more or less, I guess, the lines of my thought of myself is that I like to fight. I would do this for free anyways. And if for whatever reason you guys are willing to go ahead and pay me money on top of it, bonus.
I agree. I was watching, before you came in, I was watching your submission tapes, your top five submissions, and the submission, it happens a lot with you, and I want to get into this, but I would love to know a little bit about the art of submitting someone. When did you know that that was a strength of yours? Because even if you train, even if you do jiu-jitsu, not everyone has that ability. So when did you know that that could be your calling card?
Well, I trained martial arts traditionally my whole life, and a lot of submissions are in the traditional martial arts. Even your so-called stand-up arts have wrist locks and chokes and arm bars. But, you know, you don't really train them against an unwilling opponent. It was always more of a guy, okay, I'm going to grab you by the wrist, and now you're going to throw me with a joint lock. Okay. So I understood the concepts. And then being introduced to Brazilian jiu-jitsu, where randori or free rolling was much more the mainstay of the curriculum, you got to go ahead and work with an unwilling opponent. Like, okay, I'm going to try to choke you, but you don't want me to choke you. And the first couple times I worked out at it, and guys much smaller than I am that were nowhere near as athletic were able to choke me and submit me, it made me fall in love with it. I remember thinking, like, wow, this is truly a powerful form of one-on-one combat. Whereas hitting somebody, it's not an exact science. It's kind of, you know, it's like almost like fighting with clubs. No two shots are always exactly the same. I mean, we see it all the time. Guys get the perfect right hand landed on them, and they're still standing there when the dust clears. Same guy can get caught again by a punch that you don't like, well, that dropped him, that landed. There's so much to where the body and energy and form, it's almost like hitting a baseball. It's not as consistent as far as being able to line all the moving pieces up. Whereas grappling is much easier to be consistent with because there's a much more of a control factor. It slows down. I'm able to make adjustments on the fly and go in there and adapt to the differences of the body. And so it became a form that I realized was much more dangerous. And then even looking around in Mother Nature, I'm looking around and going, wow, if you think about it, strikers, pure strikers, are actually the prey, you know, deers, buffalo, things that hit things are trying to create space to get out of here. It's not really a form of hunting. Now, if you look in the animal kingdom, things that want to eat something, predators, they're grapplers. They grab a hold of you and they go for your neck.
Snakes,
owls. Tigers, lions, bears, hawks. They're going to, you know, you have a crocodile. It's going to snatch onto you and strangle you. It goes for the neck. It goes for that, for a grappling type move. And that's how you go after somebody in that sense. So I realize that, oh, we are built for grappling. We're not really built as striking. It's not as efficient. That's why even we have to do things to prop ourselves up. I love boxing. It's very entertaining, and I love to do striking arts. I think it's a part of martial arts. But as far as my go-to move, I'm like, well, the human hand, you know, 20 plus bones in it. It breaks pretty easily. That's why we have to wrap our hands. You know, the taping of our hands are not to protect each other's heads. It's to protect our hands so we can hit harder. So even that being said, it's like, well, it's not even realistic in a real form of martial arts, because if we were in a street fight, I might land one punch to your head and all of a sudden my hand is shattered. Whereas grappling can be a full spectrum. I could be in a fight with one of my best friends who decides that he's had not as much to drink as he think he's had, and he wants to drive his car. I take his back. I put a choke on. He goes to sleep. There's no damage done to him. I just, you know, temporarily restricted a little bit of blood flow, made him lose consciousness. No different than having a cold and standing up too fast. He wakes up. He's not, you know, it's over with. I can pin him down. We can have this conversation. So it can be extremely humane, or all to the point where if it was, you know, if I'm overseas in a battle and a guy walks through the door and all of a sudden we're going hand to hand, that same choke, same maneuver, same technique, now just hold a little bit longer, becomes a lot more lethal. So it, to me, it was a much more versatile tool, a form of combat that truly is a way of incapacitating or controlling a violent situation in a one-on-one encounter.
Frank Mir joining me here in studio, Bellator 198, April 28th at the Allstate Arena. Get tickets at Bellator.com. He's going up against Fedor. It's the heavyweight Grand Prix, so if you want to go check it out, it's going to be right here in the city. You just talked beautifully about submission art. And that was one of the things that drew me into MMA in the first place. Is I'm a boxing fan. I'm someone who enjoys fight night in Vegas. I think that there's nothing like that. But when friends of mine said, you need to start watching this because there's a real beauty to it, and I started to pick up on it, I'm not sure that the everyday fan that might be leaning towards trying out MMA understands the beauty of Brazilian jiu-jitsu or in other forms of, right, of martial arts. That why doesn't that sell the way that maybe a knockout sells?
Well, because it takes a much more of an understanding. Probably the same reason why American football is not an international sport, right? I love American football. It's very entertaining. It's a $1 billion business here in the U.S., but most men and, you know, women grow up watching it from a Pop Warner level all the way up from high school to college. We understand what we're watching. If you go overseas and you're like, hey, you like football? They're like, I don't know what that is. You blow the whistle. I see 11 guys on each side run into each other. The play lasts for like 3 seconds, and then you guys re-huddle and do it again a minute later. They're like, it's dumb. You know, that's the actual words that people, it's like, I can't get it. Soccer, you know, regular football, easier for people to kind of follow. They're spread out. It's a bigger field. Also, too, you know, more people play it on an international level because pads and helmet, a little more expensive to have in all the countries. It's like, well, if we buy a soccer ball, everybody
has
it.
Right, you're good.
So going back to that mindset, you can't take, if I took, you take a date to go to the fights. I take it to a boxing match. Pretty much anybody in the world understands what's going on to a point. Now, they might not understand a Floyd Mayweather fight, the mastery of his defense. I'm like, yo, he's making that guy look silly. That dude's a world champion. You don't make people like look silly like that. Whereas they still understand and grasp the concept of like, oh, he just hit him in the face and he's on the ground. I get it. Where if most people, if you don't have a background in grappling yourself, you've never taken a Brazilian jiu-jitsu class. Let's face it, wrestling is not big in school like compared to basketball. So a lot of people don't have the background to understand what's going on. They'll watch one guy on top of another, like it's just two guys rolling around. And that's why when I do my commentary, I try to make sure people understand what they're seeing. And that's when I take great compliments where, you know, people that follow the sport, I'm not telling them anything they never heard before. But whenever I have someone come up to me and go, wow, you know, my mother-in-law sat in the room and for the first time ever, she actually sat down and was entertained because she understood that the one guy was in the guard trying to work for the other guy's arm and what he was looking for and why the other guy was moving the way he was moving. And then she, you know, instead of it just being two guys with their legs wrapped around each other, she understood the battle that was actually occurring, the intricacies of what was happening. So that's why it just takes a little bit more education to understand what's going on. And that's why I start off telling people it's just like football. If you don't know what's going on, it's not the most entertaining. But once you do, it's a beautiful sport. And that's what the grappling aspect of MMA has in it, is that without that background of understanding what you're looking at, it's not so easy to follow as boxing is.
One of the things I love about you as a fighter is you could be down in a fight. In the first Brock Lesnar fight, I'm sitting there going, oh man, Frank's in trouble.
Yeah.
And boom, you turn it around and you submit. What's going on in your mind when you're down in a fight, yet you know that you could end a fight with the submission?
Well, and that's the thing. You don't think you're ever down. It's kind of like taking a test. You're going through math problems, just solving problems. Sometimes some problems are more difficult than others, but I never just crumple the paper up and say, okay, I'm done. I'm going to keep taking the test until I run out of time. And that's the way I look at fighting and martial arts and life itself. When I'm in there and I'm squared up with somebody and no matter what's happening, I just see it and I don't become emotionally attached to it. It's like, oh, I'm here. Oh, he just landed this. I need to move here. You need to move there. And that just comes from drilling and training and your instincts, knowing that, okay, well, you know, it's not over until they raise one of our hands. Until that moment, I have an opportunity to win the fight because I can submit you, you know, or knock you out. And that finality, that is what I'm looking for. So regardless of how bad it's going, it's not done until, you know, like the old, you know, till the fat lady sings, I'm still looking for a way to win. I don't have that type of style that's way more sportive, that's developed over the years, where guys are looking just to use the judges. They're looking to pin you against the cage, go for a takedown, kind of lay on top of you. You know, be active enough with their strikes that they're scoring points per se, as the thought process goes with, you know, with judging. But if those guys get behind, there's really not a method for them to win. Then they're like, well, now they're going to go for broke. I'm really the whole time looking to finish you. Not that I'm going to just sacrifice position. I'm trying to always be in a dominant position. It's like anything, you know, if we're in a gunfight or whether, you know, we're fighting aircrafts, I'm trying to always position myself in an advantageous position to you and put myself in a superior, you know, point of firepower. But within that realm, even if I'm losing, doesn't mean that I can't still land that shot. I'm still looking for that shot.
Do you play chess, Frank?
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Because you sound like a chess player.
I think, and that's what fighting really is. It's just at the highest level, that's what all sports really are, is a simulation of combat. That's why we started playing in the first place. That's why really fighting, that's all it is practice. We're practicing with each other. You know, even when we fight on Saturday night, it's not real. We're not really, you know, I mean, it's real in a sense that we're really trying to win, but it's still a sport. And that's what all sports are, is really back in the day when men, in between battles of the tribe that was over on the other side of the mountain, how do we keep ourselves sharp? How do we have discipline? How do we keep ourselves focused? Well, we had sports. We invented games, whether it was a stick with a hitting a ball on the ground. We did things that were competitive, that pushed each other, that made us challenge our inner selves to rise to the occasion, deal with different situations that we dealt with in real combat, adversity, fatigue, questioning our own, you know, our own willpower to want to move forward, dealing with nervousness, being scared, operating under pressure. These are all things that are going to be simulated when we fight, that on the end of the day just make us a better person.
What made you want to join Bellator?
Well, I was very happy with the UFC under the Fertitta's banner, but then once they sold it, and I kind of seen, you know, they went through and fired 20% plus of the employees in the back room, you know, as far as backstage production. And a lot of these guys are friends and family members that, you know, have been to my home. And so that was a little bit of a bad taste in my mouth. And so, and never having a meeting with anybody that was there, part of the new, crew, never being pulled in, is like, wow, I'm one of the more veteran guys here. I'm the longest tenured heavyweight fighter under contract. You think I get a phone call or something, you know, just like, hey, we'd like to have you come in. We're the new owners. You know, this is how we're going to run things. It was no such thing. So I realized that, oh, this is a pure business. So everything that they're making is business decisions. And I'd always heard great things about Scott Coker, about how he's, basically a fighter's promoter, a good guy that is a martial artist himself that really looks at fighters in that light. And so when the opportunity came where I could go ahead and you know, leave the UFC and move over, and I seen that Bellator was making big moves and getting a lot of attention and gaining a lot of momentum, and knowing the family format that was set up there, talking to some of my friends that had came over, you know, King Mo, Roy Nelson, those guys, Benson Henderson, seeing that, like, how happy they were with their transition, then I decided it was time to move over. I had a conversation, and you know, after I got my release, and very happy with that decision.
What can people expect if they plunk down money to check you out April 28th at Allstate Arena against Fedor? What can they expect?
Well, I think we're both finishers. Well, I know we're both finishers. So I think what you're going to expect is not two guys going to go out there and try to outpoint each other. We're not going to lay on each other to try to figure out and let the judges decide who's going to be the winner. Both of us are very capable of knocking each other out and very capable of submitting each other. Both of us have killer instinct to want to finish the fight. And, you know, Fedor is, you know, if one of the things maybe later in his career now is people question whether his chin is there. So one way to remedy that is to get me out of there pretty fast. I'm not somebody who wants to fight for the full 15 minutes. It's, you know, I don't get paid by the second. So the sooner I get him out of there, the happier I get to get in the locker room and collect my paycheck. So I think both of us are going to go out there. You know, there'll be a feeling out. We're both chess players. I don't think that they're not going to ring the bell and we're going to come sprinting at each other. But at the same time, the minute we're going to come out, scope each other out, and we're looking for a weakness, a hole, a pattern. And once one of us sees what we think we need to go for, then the fireworks are starting.
What do you think is the next big thing in MMA, or what would you like to see MMA grow into, and how could it get there?
I'm actually happy where MMA is right now. There's a part of me that kind of wants to keep it this size. I think that just like boxing isn't a, you know, like, you know, the T-Mobile Arena, you know, I don't think fight events are meant to have 20,000 plus people inside of an arena. Fighting is more intimate than that. That's, you know, hey, that's the realm of football. You know, that's the realm of, you know, watching a hockey game, you know, basketball. You can have fill up stadiums like that. Fighting, you know, unless you're there to say that you were there, you know, anything larger than a 10,000 person arena is too much. Fighting is an intimate experience. And so I like to keep it that way. You know, and I understand that, you know, guys are like, oh, we're going to be mainstream, we're going to be football. I'm like, no, why? Football has football. Hockey's hockey. Soccer's soccer. These sports have their categories. They have, we're fighting, you know, this is where we should stay. And I'm happy with, I think the sport has grown to a very, very acceptable level that we're still, now we're respected as athletes. People know what we do is not just, you know, we're not drinking a beer, getting off the bar stool and walking inside of a cage. They realize that there's a ton of training that goes in this, that we're trained, skilled athletes. And, you know, so I'm very happy with where we're at.
You're a Vegas guy. Are you excited about the Las Vegas Knights and what they've done?
Extremely. I'm so happy that, you know, for many years, I mean, I was born and raised in Vegas. You know, we always heard that you would never have a professional team there. We can't support it. And then, you know, and I remember that one argument I always had people, oh, you know, gambling. I'm all the guys come here and party anyways. What do you mean gambling? What does it have to do with anything? I never understood that argument. I'm like, you know, all the guys that play in L.A., it's a three-hour drive. You know what I mean? Like, it's a 45-minute plane trip. They all have private jets. They can jump over here and gamble and meet gamblers. And
same thing for the guys in Phoenix.
Yeah.
It's an hour flight.
Yeah, I never understood that thought, you know? And so I was like, it makes all the sense in the world. I mean, and I think the UFC really, honestly, probably really put that into motion. Because, you know, hey, you know, there's fights going to happen. You know, when we have fights in big cities, it's not hard to, you know, convince people to come. You know, telling your wife we're going to go to Chicago, Rosemont Center to watch the fights, probably not hard to argue with her on. No, okay, honey, you know, we'll come up from, you know, Indiana. We're going to go see the fights. Vegas is probably one of the easiest arguments to have for that. Send there and go, hey, honey, we're going to go see the fights. Your wife might not be interested in seeing the fights, but it's still a trip to Vegas. So I'm like, so if that works for that, why wouldn't it work for football? Why wouldn't it work for basketball? Why wouldn't it work for hockey? And sure enough, they built a phenomenal T-Mobile Arena.
It's awesome.
Right? And then, you know, the expansion team, the way they, you know, really, you know, opened the door for us to, as far as with the draft and be able to pick some of the players and put together the team that we got to put together. Obviously, you know, the proof is in their results. One of the best expansion teams, I mean, record-wise, ever to come out. And the thing I'm most proud of is the city. Every time I've gone to a match, even at the beginning, before they gained the momentum they have now, it was selling out. People were there. We supported it. And it showcased that, you know, hey, you know, the Raiders now will be coming in a few years, you know, build the stadium. If you build it, they will come. It was almost, you know, a Kevin Costner movie all again, you know. So it's great to see that we can have more things that the youth and everybody else around it builds the community. It gives us more than just gambling.
See, that's the thing. I was in Summerlin about 6 weeks ago, right outside of Red Rock. And I was shocked that there's like hockey arenas and there's a youth tournament going on. That there's a lot of young hockey players out there in the desert that are growing out of all of this.
Our sports in Las Vegas in the last, I don't know, 5 to 7 years has just exploded. I mean, Gorman High School on the football level has been, you know, 5, 6, 7 state championships in a row. We've won a couple national titles now. Number one football team in the nation out of Las Vegas, Nevada.
Because, well, and we have a player here in Chicago, Chris Bryant.
Yeah, came out of it. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, playing there for the Cubs and world champion now himself. So it's showing that, you know, that the sports, which I'm a big fan. I'm very pro sports for your children. I don't think you need to go into it with the mentality that your child is going to be the next, you know,
Frank
Michael
Mayer.
Jordan, you know. There's only so many professional athletes in the world, and that's one aspect of it. But I think that the rest of us can train sports and pull so much from it, because going back to what I said earlier, it's all about what it teaches us and trains us. And it's a way to mold young minds. And the fact that now that we're having more opportunities in Las Vegas, and we're not just known as a gambling town. And, you know, I've always hated that montage. You know, what happens if Vegas stays in Vegas? You know, people feel like, come to Vegas and act like an idiot. No one's going to know. I'm like, ah, oh, man, that bugs the hell out of me. But now, you know, with the sports team and shows of the community there, people come there for opportunities to make a good living. The cost of living is great. But now that, you know, you see that how much we give back to our children for all the facilities that you're seeing developed for our young athletes.
Frank, this was delightful. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm excited to see your fight. April 28th, it'll be at Allstate Arena. If you want tickets, Bellator.com. It'll be Frank Mir versus Fedor. It's going to be good. Two of the greatest heavyweights in MMA history going up against each other in the heavyweight Grand Prix. Thanks so much for coming in and doing
pleasure,
this.
Man.
I truly appreciate this.
Great interview, man. Thank you.
That was me with Frank Mir. We sat down yesterday before the show yesterday and talked. And that was one of my favorite interviews that I've ever done. And we do a lot of interviews on the show, and a lot of them are great. And by the way, if you missed any of them this week, 670thescore.com/Lawrence Holmes Show. On a personal note, as the host of this show, I'd like to thank you for having enough trust or faith in this show to bring you compelling interviews. You probably aren't an MMA fan. If you are, then you dug it. But if you aren't and you stuck around, that means something to me. that if you were like, you know what, I don't really know a lot about Frank Mir. I don't really know a lot about MMA, but I trust that Lawrence isn't going to put something on the air that I might not enjoy. So I, as the host of the show, I really appreciate that you give me room to do that, that we keep trying to put as many cool interviews as we can on the show, and you find stuff out. I had seen Frank talk. I knew that he could talk, but there's a difference between being able to talk and being interesting. And I walked away with him being really interesting. And focusing in on the art of submission in MMA and hearing him talk about it so passionately, it was very cool to sit in the room across from him as he's explaining all of this, and I think making it simple and plain. So, again, just on a personal note, I wanted to thank you for allowing this show to do some of that stuff. And we do, you know, react, we take phone calls, but I love doing the interviews, especially when they're that good. And I will tell you that that is the goal. The goal is that when we bring people on air, that we do an interview that's good enough for you to enjoy, and then bring back and pieces of it that we think were pertinent that you might enjoy at a later date. So just want to say thanks on that. Take a break. We'll talk a little bit more about the Bears, maybe throw in a little bit more about the Cubs and what they did today, and perhaps a Bulls thought or two before we get out of here at 9 here on The Score. Julie, thank you very much. I want to give a special thank you to Village Tavern and Grill out here in Schaumburg. That's where we've been doing the show tonight. This place is hopping. You know, I thought that we would get to like 7:30, 8 o'clock, and there wouldn't still be people waiting to get in here, but that is not the case. It is still jam-packed, and that's a good thing. Thanks to Sam Adams for bringing us out for this broadcast as well. We appreciate them. And check out their new 76 blend. It's pretty good stuff. If you need legal advice by a reputable attorney, send questions that you want answered to cbschicago.com/legaladvice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz and Associates. That's cbschicago.com/legaladvice. And we should also let you know that this segment is being brought to you by the fine folks over at Pro Football Weekly. Go to profootballweekly.com, draft your greatest team of the NFL's modern era, and you could win a trip for two to the big game next February in Atlanta. That's profootballweekly.com, home of the best coverage of the draft and free agency. I'm looking forward to really like sinking my teeth into the Pro Football Weekly draft guide. I will tell you that what at least I'm planning in my mind, and I haven't talked to Herbie about this, but what I'm planning in my mind is compiling all of the football interviews that we've done and will do leading up to the NFL draft and really going crazy with all of the analysis on what the Bears' needs are, what Nagy being the coach means for the type of players that they might draft, who makes the most sense, what things are good about the draft process, what things need to change. It's cool because we're getting close to the point where, you know, you're less than 2 weeks away from the draft where I think it makes the most sense. Even as someone who covered the NFL for as long as I covered it on a daily basis, I think sometimes we get a little crazy and you start thinking back to, and I know it's just fun and it's supposed to be just about content, that people are putting out content. I appreciate all the guys that work really, really hard on mock drafts, but I've never found any of them helpful outside of getting you prepared to understand who the players are. Like, to me, that's their greatest reason for being, is to educate you about the potential players that are going to be available. But trying to figure out what a team needs before you go through free agency, and I think that changes significantly what a draft strategy is for a team, I've just kind of always found it a little superfluous. And I know that that's ironic coming from someone who hosts a sports radio show, because basically that's what we do. We're superfluous to the discussion of what's going on. But I'm excited now, because now is that point of the year where you can really start looking at the strategy of the teams in the top 10. And you can start saying, well, who needs what? Who's going to be willing to make a move to try and get ahead of someone else? Are we going to see four quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4 in this draft? And how does that change the outlook on what teams behind them, like the Bears, are then in a position to do for the draft? So I'm excited that now that we're kind of landing the plane. There's also, I'll just tell you straight up and down, with me, there's also a part, it's partly like cramming for a test. And I'm looking forward to the purge in my head that's going to happen. I'm also looking forward to the new Purge movie. But that's another story for another day. I'm looking forward to, I've got all these guys, like, their film, their 40 times, their coaches, what they said about, I got all that stuff in my head. And honestly, none of it will matter. Well, most of it won't matter after the Bears make their pick. Then it'll be about the guy that they pick. And I can purge a lot of that information and move on to knowing even more about the one person that the Bears end up deciding on in the first round. And, you know, then taking it from there from the rest of the guys that are in the draft. But that's a good thing. Like, when you're reading, you know about this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy. This guy might be a good pick for the Bears at 8, and this guy might be a good pick if he's there. They should probably take him. And then they take someone, and you're able to just let go of everything else. Say, okay, now let's focus our attention on what this player was in college, how quickly they're going to be able to get up to speed, and whether or not they can help the Bears win. So I look forward to that. It's going to be a fun couple of weeks, and I know that our coverage here is going to be great. Personal plug, with the Cubs playing games in the Eastern time zone, the days of the draft, I'm doing some work with NBC Sports Chicago that week that you can check out during the draft, and I'm very excited about the draft coverage that we're going to have. I'm also excited about the Scores draft coverage. The Cubs are going to be over the air, as they should be. Our draft coverage is going to be on 670thescore.com. So the regular crew of people that break down the draft for you, they will be available to you. So make sure that you keep that in mind. I know we're running promos, but just know that if you're in the car and you've got a smartphone that connects, like my car, you know, can do that, Wi-Fi, I can connect. Make sure you listen to 670thescore.com. If you're at the crib, watch what we do over on NBC Sports Chicago and toggle between both. It's all good. It'll be good either way. We'll take a break, but not until after I tell you that this segment was brought to you by Tomorrow Sleep. Get heavenly sleep with the new Tomorrow Hybrid mattress, bedding, and more. Comfort designed by Serta Simmons Sleep Experts. Use code DRIVE2 for $200 off when you spend $500 or more. We'll talk with Julie DeCaro about what she's going to do on her show next here on The Score. Julie DeCaro's show is coming up after mine, and she is now back in The Score studios in downtown Chicago. Hey, Jules.
Hey.
So I saw your tweet earlier about how watching cold baseball is starting to annoy you. And I am right there with you.
It's really awful. I know they wanted to get the season underway earlier this year, but I mean, just watching the players out there being miserable day after day when it's gray and the ivy's brown and, you know, it's just, there's just nothing fun about it.
It's been really difficult too, like just from a Chicago standpoint, because yesterday was just such a tease. It was such a tease. Like, I got up and got out. You know, I walked to the gym because I knew it was going to be warm enough to do that yesterday. So I walked to the gym, and I was like, this is great. This is what I need. I need a little bit of sunshine, some 60-degree weather. And then I was out, and it was 73 degrees, and I said, this is what I needed. And then 2 hours later, when I was getting ready to leave for the station, it was down to 49 degrees.
I know. I went into a banquet last night with, like, capri pants and sandals on, and I came out, and I was absolutely freezing. It was really awful. And the fact that it only lasted for a day is just so cruel. Usually we get more than one day out of it.
And when you saw the forecast last week, it looked like we were going to get 3 days of really, not that it's been horrible, you know, but that we were going to get 3 days of decent weather. And you're right. It was very much a tease. It just kind of came and went. And now you look at the forecast for the next week, like it's going to be this.
I know. Like the next 10 days. I was just looking at that before I came into the big studio. Like, it's just all upper 40s, lower 50s, and rain. And it's like we don't even have a spring anymore around here. It just goes straight from winter to like 80 degrees. There's no, yeah, like, remember when you were a kid and it was like finally warm enough to wear shorts? It was like 60, but your mom would let you do it. And like, you know, the flowers were blooming and stuff. We just never have that anymore.
Bring on all I honestly, what I would like, not that I can order weather, but if I could have 4 or 5 days of sunshine in 50, I'd be fine with that. That would get me right. But this kind of every day is kind of gloomy and,
yeah,
and raw. It's not any fun. Like, it's almost less fun than if it were like what's going on in Minnesota.
Oh, I'd much rather have a snowstorm than have this. Snowstorms are fun. You have to go to the store, you buy a bunch of junk food, you get snowed in, you watch TV. I mean, this is just miserable.
Speaking of junk food, yesterday I ran across a Krispy Kreme honey bun. I bought it. I had to buy it. And I was just like, what type of sorcery is this? And, you know, it's part of my platform when I run for mayor of Chicago. No honey buns, no Flamin' Hots.
Yeah.
For the children.
Right.
Adults can, you know, have what you want, but I don't want the children.
Takis got to go, too.
Yeah, they got to go. They got it for the kids. The adults can have it, but the kids, you know, they can't have it. And I just sat there going, wow, this is high-level junk food, like, marriage right here.
Was it in a package?
No, it was like the Hostess honey bun.
Okay, so it wasn't like at the Krispy Kreme store.
No, it was like its own packaging, and it was much bigger than the Hostess honey bun.
I'm extremely suspicious of packaged Krispy Kreme stuff. Not just Krispy Kreme, but like I tried the Cronut, and I'm also very suspicious of donut mashups. So I tried the Cronut, and that was terrible.
There's a couple of places who I think really do it well, like out in the burbs, Waltz, their bakery, which Waltz is a grocery store out south. Their bakery does a really good, and I think I guess Cronut is trademark, so you can't like call it, because there's a place in New York that put it together first and they trademarked it. So everywhere else is like.
So we're in trouble now? That's what you're telling me?
No, we're not in trouble. We're not making money off of it. But you go places and it's like Dosant, that's what it is.
Nah, or whatever.
Yeah, it's a croissant donut.
It's like a dry donut.
Yeah, it's flaky. Yeah, it's flaky. But there's a couple places that do it well. Well, when we go on our culinary tour, you and I, when we eat caramel cake and
on the way to
Dosants,
on the way to our curling matches.
Yes. When we do that. All of that goes into the blender of sweets, the diabetic coma that we are going to put ourselves in to enjoy some nice treats.
That'll be great. I'll start stockpiling insulin.
Yes, please do. You probably should. I mean, our whole generation probably should do some stockpiling of insulin, because it's hard to resist. I was over at Huck Finn today, and strangely enough, one of my favorite thing at Huck Finn is a brownie. They do a chocolate brownie that's dynamite, and my bachelor party ended up at Huck Finn. Like, that's how the night ended. Goff, you know, plied me with shots of tequila, and then we ended up at Huck Finn at like 2 a.m. So they have a brownie which they'll make warm for you, and at Huck Finn they have a donut called the Texas and a donut called the Alaska. So there's a giant donut and then there's a really giant donut, and they serve it with scoops of ice cream and hot fudge. Jules,
oh, that's the best. Oh. I mean, brownie sundaes, it doesn't get any better than that.
Right. You get a warm donut with ice cream and hot fudge? Man, that's living.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
But you need insulin. You're going to need it. What are you going to do on your show tonight?
I am here to absorb all the Cubs angst that everyone else has been talking about. So, look, there's some scary stuff going on in the world right now. If you want to yell about Cubs baseball, come at me. So Ryan Davis is going to be here for that. We're going to get ready for the draft with Greg Gabriel. David Schuster is going to be here to talk about the Bulls and where they go from here. So a lot of stuff, but a lot of calls and texts tonight as well.
All right. I like it. Someone actually texted, did you watch the Andre the Giant documentary?
I have not yet. I know that's like sacrilegious. Yeah, me too.
Yeah, so like now I got some time this weekend. I'm going to check it out for sure.
Yeah, me too. It looked really good. I heard it was great.
All right, well, thanks, Jules. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
And I'm looking forward to listening to your show on my drive home from Schaumburg.
All right, buddy. Have fun.
That's Julie DeCaro. Her show is coming up next. Big thanks to the people here at Village Tavern and Grill. I got the chicken tenders, and they are as good as everyone said they were going to be. Thanks to Sam Adams for bringing us out here and taking the show on the road. We appreciate that. Everyone involved in the getting this thing on the air. Engineer Dan, should I call you that? Yeah, all right, we'll go with that. Yeah, all right. He's trying to figure out a way that he can go see the Infinity War when he's got to work. Good luck with that, bruh. And thanks to the boys back at the ranch, Herb Lawrence, executive producer of the show,
Hold
and
on.
Mike Chen.
Huh?
What?
Is the Infinity War just one day and then it goes like right to DVD or something like that?
He's one of those guys.
Stop being that dude. Stop.
He needs to be in the know when it's happening before people spoil it for him.
That's dumb.
Online.
That movie's going to be in theaters for at least a month.
At least. It's probably like 3 months, but I get it. There are some people that are like that. I am not one of those people. I'll find a nice like 10:30 show one morning and go check it out and be happy. But he's one of those dudes. So there it is. That's Herb Lawrence, Mike Chen, with the great picture this week. It's fantastic stuff. It's on my Instagram, at Lawrence W. Holmes. It's where you can follow me on Twitter as well. Have a great rest of your night. I will see you, no show Monday because of Cubs. I'll see you Tuesday at 6 o'clock on The Score.
Bye-bye. Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace
out. Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 40%. Up to 40% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.